στον αιματοδοτρό σου και του ήλιου και του γιου πνεύμα του ζωή. Δόξα σου Θεό, η ελπίση μου, δόξα σου. Βασιλεύ, ουράνιο, παράκλητο το πνεύμα τη αληθία, ο πανταχού παρών και τα πάντα πληρών, ο θησαυρό των αγαθών και ζωή χορηγό. Ελθέ και σκύνο του νεμινή και καθάρισον εμά από πάση κυλίδο και σώσον αγαθέτα ψυχά ημών. You may be seated. I don't know how clearly you can hear me. Can you hear me at the back? Clearly? All right. Okay. A big thank you to Father Athanasio and the youth of Mascot for giving me this opportunity to be with you tonight and say a few thoughts and answer maybe some questions, and we see where this gets us. The subject, as it was suggested to me, is staying true to our Christian faith and identity. I will not say a lot, but there are a few things I want to mention. And I want to start with a story that I heard years ago from Gero de Emiliano, from my elder. A very simple story. So it was when Russians were under the communism and they didn't have the freedom of speech. They couldn't freely express that they were Christians. And one of them, who was a very pious Christian, was together with, let's say, a politician, and they went outside of a church. The churches, I think back then, they were shut. And there was another person, a third person, observing what the Christian would do if he was going to do his cross or not in front of the politician who was communism. If he was to do his cross, he would have gone in trouble. If he wasn't going to do his cross, the question was how much he believed. So there was a dilemma there. And so this person tried to instigate a reaction, and he said in front of the politician, "We're outside of a church." And the Orthodox person said, "Yes, I know." And he bowed a little bit like that. And he said it again, "We're outside of a church." And the reply was, "Yes, I know." So he didn't do his cross. Why do you think he didn't do his cross? Because he didn't want to provoke anything. It's not a matter of whether we believe or not sometimes. It's a matter if we respect others enough not to put them in a challenge. The politician would have been in the challenge of going against this person, put him into prison, and then his family would have gone through a challenge not having a father around, and he would have even challenged his own faith. So I guess our times, they might be similar, and the subject is staying true to our Christian faith and identity. And now we have the challenge of the virus. And some of us, we think that by expressing our opinions in a very strong manner, we are heroes. But the point is not if we are heroes or not. The point is, are we real Christians? There are examples at the Gerontico, the Fathers of the Desert, that they talk about monastics who asked their elders for the blessing to become martyrs. And one of them asked for it. He didn't get the blessing. He went disobeying. He went and he became a martyr, and Christ did not accept his martyrdom. So that's why the fathers, they used to say that we cannot challenge our faith and we cannot challenge situations. We can't, if it is, let's say, a time that they would kill us for our faith, we can't just go forward and say, "I'm a Christian," and challenge the other person to kill us and challenge our own faith to be killed. This is not something that everybody can handle and everybody should be doing. This is something that shows that we are not humble, I think. If we were to be humble, first of all, we ask for a blessing to do something like this. And then, if God allows us to be challenged, then we testify our faith. And I'm saying this because sometimes we think that staying true to our Christian faith and identity means that we preach orthodoxy or death. I think that's not the orthodox spirit. This is just some people that they have extreme ideas. And when we go through big waves in life, sometimes it's wiser to go under the wave and survive than try again to be the hero and lose our lives, especially with Australian waves. They are not friendly like the Greek waves. So remember this, because it's not always, how can I put it, it's not smart and it's not wise and it's not a good example if we try to be the hero. It doesn't, like Christ, he didn't try to be the hero. There were instances that they were trying to corner him and he was going through the people escaping and going away because his time has not yet come. All right? We need to have discernment when to do and what to do. And if we really want to stay true to our Christian faith and identity, we don't need to get into arguments. Arguments don't always prove a point. If someone doesn't want to be convinced, you can have all the arguments on earth. They will never change their way of thinking. And the more we react, the more they will react as well. And then we achieve nothing. So sometimes it's better if we quietly pray for something than try and create arguments about faith and about everything we believe is right. And we see that there are people that they don't even know the right dogma. Like if you go to a Greek village, you will see a lot of the elderly people, they don't even know the right dogma. But such people, they can perform miracles. Because they have simplicity and because they really love God. So sometimes it's not about knowing what's right and what's wrong, but it depends on our approach, whether God will bless what we're doing or not. And we need to remember this. Even if we know the right thing, we can't just show off and humiliate others. We need to be humble. We need to approach things with kindness and not tell them I know what's right and that's it. I don't know if you have any questions about this. And then there is a number of questions that we have from everyone who submitted questions previously.
Situation that we talked about, male rising.
Can you give me an example?
Some people's vocation or job choices would be that they focus more on financial outcomes.
They focus on what?
Financial outcomes or outcomes which are growing, particularly at a positive or certain level, but that may mean that there's an expectation in your role to perform certain elements of your way that progresses something which might conflict with your Christian ethos. And if you do it, you progress, it's great, it gives you security. If you don't do it, the performance won't be delivered. Your role then under-deliver, you may lose your job. How do you balance those type of things without losing yourself to the secular world?
I guess this is similar to someone being rich and someone being average. And I will tell you why I say this is similar. We have examples of rich people that they will step on other people to go higher and become wealthy. But what do they get out of it? At some point, at the beginning, they might not even be able to sleep at night. Then they will be able to sleep at night because their conscience goes out of the window. But they will look back at some point and they will see that everything was for what? For money. But we have example of people that they are rich and they did the right thing and they helped others. So the problem is not when you have a position, whether to accept a good position or not. But the problem is, what do you need to do to get there? So if there is a challenge that tells you that if I want to get somewhere, I have to do something that doesn't agree with my conscience, I won't do that. But if you can get there by simply being polite and do your job, get there. There is nothing wrong with that. And if you get there, if you're in charge of other people, you can give a good example to them. You don't need to talk to them about faith necessarily, but you can give a good example and you can lead other people the way that you would like to be led. But if your path goes through doing things that are not proper, don't betray your conscience. Every occasion is different. It's not always like black and white. And you always need to talk about these dilemmas with your spiritual father, but that's what I would suggest. Anyone else? How do you choose which waves to face? You face the little ones. And you avoid the big ones. Give me an example. Can you give me an example?
Maybe one particular example, but say, like,
what do I mean? I mean a lot of things, but in our everyday life, there are situations that we can't fight against. For example, you have a boss that might be an atheist. Why would you try and convince him if you know that it's impossible to convince him? Why would you go against this wave? It's not your fight to fight, to convince someone who doesn't want to be convinced. So lay low, you will keep your job, and you can believe whatever you want without creating issues. But let's say that you have a son who tells you, Mom, the teacher told us such and such at school today. You have to have the ability to explain to him, this is not what we believe in. This is not right. That's a small wave that you should overcome for the benefit of your children. I don't know if this example, yeah. We can't, for example, we can't go against something that we know that we won't have any results. It's utopic, it doesn't make sense. And who do we think we are? But if there are things that we can fix within our family, even within our work environment, if there are things that we can actually fix, we need to fix them. It's just that we need to know our own strength. And we can't say, I will start this fight and may God help me. No, God will not help you if you're proud. I'm not saying for you, all right? Yeah. But this attitude, it's not a brave one. This is a stupid one. It's like we're the center of the universe and look at me, I'm doing this. Do it. What are you going to get out of it? Nothing. But if there are things that we can fix, even if they are small, we have to fix them. We have to do our best, of course. And there are challenges every day that we have to overcome, and they're emotional, and they are financial, and they are all sort of challenges every day that we have to overcome and stay strong. Does this answer your question? Anything else? We've got some questions.
So one of the questions that was submitted was, how do you determine what is God's will and what is your own will, especially when you do not know what life holds this, so when you're reading these directions?
How do you determine what's God's will and what's your own will, especially when you don't know what the next direction your life is? Does anyone want to say something on that? Any thoughts? How do we know what God wants from us? Any ideas? Yerdas Emilianos again used to talk about self-emptying, αυτοκένωση. So I guess if we try to empty ourselves from what we think is right for us, ideas, opinions, thoughts, then God will lead us in the right direction. But how do we understand the right direction? The gospel says somewhere, and we've said this before, the gospel says, I'll say it in Greek and then we'll try and translate it. Ο αγαπών με γνώσετε πότερον εγώ απεμαυτού λαλώ. So basically it says that the one who loves me, the one who loves God, will end up knowing. So all it takes for us to determine, to discern what we need to follow is to love God. Because when we love God, even if we make a mistake, He will turn things around and He will lead us in the right direction. And if He opens a door in front of us, no one else on the planet can shut it. If he wants something to happen, it will happen in a way that no one will ever understand how it happened. Like, it was for Christ to be resurrected after his death. The devil, the demons, they did their best to kill him through the Jews, to bury him, to seal the tomb, and yet the resurrection happened. How? The way that God knew, because it was meant to happen. So even if they try to kill us, even if they try to take our positions, even if they try to isolate us, it can't happen if God doesn't allow. It can't happen. And if God opens a way in front of us, no one on earth can go against it. And even if it seems like we are going the wrong direction because someone took us out of our path, it will come around. It will come around. I've said this before as well. Once, it happened, Elder Sophronius, Saint Sophronius now, he was in the Russian monastery, and back then in Mount Athos, and back then the abbot who was in charge of the Russian monastery, because they had like thousands of monks in one monastery, 2,000-3,000 of monks back then, he had this gift from God. If he was to give a blessing for someone to do something, God would bless it. And if he wasn't going to give the blessing for someone to do something, something would happen to him to understand that he was disobedient. It was the way that God helped him lead the brotherhood. So if someone was to say, if the abbot was to say to someone, go to the port to unload the boat, and he himself went in the forest to cut wood, a trunk would fall on his foot to understand that he was disobedient. That's how much grace this abbot had. So this abbot once told to Gerda to send Sophronio that he wanted him to learn Greek. He was speaking Russian, but he was not speaking Greek. He was in Mount Athos, but the monastery was Russian. He was not speaking Greek. And he asked him to start learning Greek. When Elder Sophronio started to learn Greek, because he was an ascetic, he had the noetic prayer, he felt that the prayer exited from his heart, went to his brain, and it fell on the book. In simple terms, he found it very difficult to pray because of the distraction of learning Greek. So he went back to the abbot and told him, I struggle a lot. Do I have to do it? And the abbot told him, God does not judge twice. God does not judge twice. So Elder Sophronius, Saint Sophronius, was obedient. He did what he was told. He learned Greek. And then he ended up being the confessor of a lot of monasteries in Mount Athos, because there were not a lot of spiritual people back then in Mount Athos. It was, the monasticism started falling apart. And then he wrote his books. They were translated in Greek. He could supervise them. There was a reason behind it. There was a reason behind it. So if God wants something and we are trying to do what God wants us to do, nothing can get on the way. Even if it looks like something will get on the way, things will turn around and God's will be done. I don't know if this makes any sense. Any comments on that? All right, we've got.
Another question we've got is, how can we get rid of our ego?
How can we get rid of our ego? All right, I want opinions for these things. We face them every day. It's not like we don't. All you need to do is look in the mirror How do we get rid of our ego, anyone? Not to think of what? Okay. So we will be thinking that there is a small chance that I might be wrong. 0.0001%. It's not an easy question, but do you have any idea? How can we get rid of our ego? Once I was in Ormilia, the female monastery of Simonopetra, and I was helping one of the nuns. There were few olive trees that they were chopped off, and she was trying the poor thing. She was skinny and small as well, and she was trying to uproot the roots. And I went there to help her, because I was there for a few days, and I was supposed to be the man. Like, she was weak, I was not very strong, but anyway, so I had a bright idea. I said, how about if we just cover them up? And then she said something. She said, Gerontes Emilianos said once that we will die first and then our ego will go away. That's how deep our ego is. And she said, it's the same with these roots of the tree. We have to get rid of them, we can't cover them up. And then we started digging. Yeah. But this is how difficult it is to get rid of our ego. The only thing is that some people, they look into themselves and they are partially aware of the fact that they're not perfect, and some other people, they just don't care. Like the people that we said before, that they can step on other people to become rich. They just don't care. As far as they get what they want in life. Yeah. So it is a struggle, and how? If you cultivate God's love, and if you manage to love Him more than yourself, then your ego goes on the side. Saint Sophronius was talking about love up to the point of self-hating. I'm not saying to get to that. This could be an ascetic experience, but what I'm saying is, the more we love God, the less we care about ourselves. And you can see this in your families. The more you love someone, the less you care about your rights. This happens to the parents. They love their kids. They don't care what happens. All they care is for them to be safe. It's a natural thing. It's an instinct. If two people fall in love, they don't care for themselves. They care for the other person. That's love. So when you love God more than yourself, it's natural that you don't care about yourself that much. If you love others more than yourself, you don't care about yourself that much. And it's a process, and it doesn't happen overnight. But I guess if we don't try to love others and God, we just love ourselves, and we are full of it. We're full of our ego. Anyone on that? It's not easy, I tell you that much. But at this struggle, don't despair. Just be aware that it's not easy and keep fighting. Eventually, we will get somewhere with God's grace, of course. How do you know if someone is the right partner for you or not? There is a little talk. It's in the book, I think, small book called The Church at Prayer. And then, again, Yerdes Milanos talks about, basically tells you what to look into the other person before you get married. And there is a number of things. There is a number of things. So that's why the engagement is essential, because the engagement is not a wedding, it's not a sacrament. It's the time that you need to get to know the other person better. And if you don't get to know the other person properly, how are you going to spend your life, the rest of your life, with them? You need to get to know them well. The issue is that sometimes, and we've talked about it before and we will talk about it again, we've got a live panel coming up in Liverpool, and the subject will be on relationships. I think it's beginning of December. So we'll talk about it there again. But the issue is that sometimes we blurry the waters with a number of things. We blurry the waters because our priorities in life are not correct. Like, we aim to find someone with good looks and we overlook the character issue. And you can get a handsome man or a pretty wife and regret it for the rest of your life. Or regret it for a while, because then you get a divorce and that's it. You move on. Or the other issue might be that from very early you get involved in sexual relationships. And I'm not saying this from the point of sinning. I'm saying this from the point that you don't get to know the character of the person. If the attraction is sexual and it's not emotional and there is no love and you don't understand the character of the other person in depth, and you make the waters blurry with all the other attractions, then you will fail. Not because this is a sin, we say this again, but because your sight is not sound. You don't get to see the other person as she truly is. 20 years down the track, this attraction will go away. You get bored of things. And then you have a human being next to you with which you had no other connection than the sexual. What are you going to do with this person in your life? You won't even want to see him or her, because there is no inner connection. And this is a problem. We don't see things long term. We see things short term. And who is popular, who is fun, all these things are important, but up to a point. We need to get the balance right. If one ingredient when you cook is overpowered, if you put too much salt, you can't eat the food, regardless how expensive the ingredients are. And if you don't put any salt, it's tasteless. If you put too much oil, it becomes a soup. You need a balance. You need a balance. Otherwise, your marriage becomes a salata. And that's not wise. Yeah. And especially if it's a Greek salad, forget about it. So we need to get to know the other person inside out before we move to the next step, whatever this next step is. And if we don't do it from the beginning, and if we don't lay the right foundation from the beginning, it's not going to last, or it will be very troubled. And it's a shame, because usually the parents, they just sign off some papers, they get a divorce, but what happens with the kids? You create lives that they will suffer because of your stupidity. Sorry to put it like that. It happens every day. And this is what it is. And that's why we need patience in a relationship when we start something. We need to pray about the other person. And we need to pray to God to enlighten us if this is the right person for us. And if it's not, to do something. I'll give you an example. A friend of mine, a spiritual child, he was looking to find someone for a number of years. Every person who was coming along was not exactly as it should be for a family. It was good for other purposes, but not for a family. Then a girl came along. She was perfect for a family. Perfect. But he didn't feel that there was something that would last. And I asked him, why do you feel this way? He said, I'm afraid she's jealous of me, and this thing suffocates me. So I said to him, he has a special relationship with St. George. I said to him, go and pray to St. George and see what he will do. He went, he prayed at St. George, and the same day he broke it off. He felt suffocated. He couldn't continue. When we love someone, we trust him. We're not jealous of him. We trust him or her. If you don't trust someone, what are you doing? How are you going to spend the rest of your lives together? Your relationship has to be built on trust. If there is no trust, think about it twice. If you're like, they say like that the bear sometimes hugs her little ones so much that she kills them. She's too strong. She suffocates them. We can't do this in a relationship. We can't kill the other person in the name of our love. This is not love. This is self-love. We want to be loved the way we want to be loved. This is not us loving the other person. So jealousy in a relationship can destroy everything. And he realized it, and he got out of it. And it's a problem, because he wanted someone, and he's a good guy. So, yes, emotions are not always enough to tell us what happens with our partner. We need to pray, and we need to look into all these things that we just said. Otherwise, we're in danger, they're in danger, we will be hurt, they will be hurt, and our children, they will end up having psychological problems from our divorce. And it's not fair. It's not fair. That's what it is. Anyone? It's a very big issue, this one, and we face it every day.
We might have time for one or two more questions. Another question that was submitted was, how do you reset a distracted mind, particularly when you're trying to focus on clarity and breath?
How do you concentrate?
Yes, so if you're concentrating on breath, then your mind keeps getting distracted. So how do you refocus and reset your focus onto breath?
Anyone, any tips? Good luck. We all have the same problem. We go to church and we think about football or something. The funny thing is, when we go to football, we don't think about church. So, yeah. I wish. Yes. The distractions, especially when we try to do the right thing, the distractions, they will arise from everywhere. So when you try to pray, you will be distracted. That's to be expected. The way we can deal with it is by, as soon as we realize the distraction, to go back to where we were. And of course, sometimes this might mean that if we read a prayer book, we might need to read the same line for 20 times. But if we see that this keeps happening in such a big scale, maybe just not when we're in the church, but maybe we just need to look into other things, like if we're too tired. You can't spend your day doing whatever you like, including work which you have to do, and then leave your prayer for when you're exhausted. You won't be able to focus. And then how is your sleep? If your sleep is not good enough, you won't have energy to pray. How is your diet? Sometimes we might be fasting a week more than what we should. So we need to have a balance in these things, and then if we do have a balance in everything, when our mind flies away, we need to try and get it back. And slowly this will become a habit. The way the distraction becomes a habit, the concentration becomes a habit as well. It takes time, but we can train our intellect to concentrate. And everybody is different, so everybody needs to find a way that works better for them. But there are ways that we can train our intellect to concentrate. And as we said, whenever we realize that we're distracted, get it back on track. Any comments? We've got one more.
Do you think it's possible to have a deeper spiritual connection to a certain saint or a certain parish, irrespective of what your local parish might be? So, for example, to give you an example, my local parish is really good at eating. Is it normal, I suppose, to feel a deeper connection to, say, Saint Raphael and Irene Nicholas, or is that?
So I guess now that Father Athanasios is leaving, your favorite parish will be Cobra, eh? Right? The parishes, they set, I guess, geographically, but we can't set up our hearts geographically. So if, for example, my spiritual father is in Liverpool, I would like to go there once in a while. Might be a distance and I can't go always, but I might want to go there once in a while to see him. That's not a bad thing. And we are free to go wherever we want anyway. So it's not a problem to like another parish other than your parish that you're close to. But it's a practical reason why you go to the parish which is next to your home. And usually, not always, because people move houses, but if you're baptized in there, married in there, you have a connection with the parish. And if the actual priest is your spiritual father, there is an even more connection. But in the Orthodox Church, we are free to choose to go wherever we want. It's practical reasons why we have the parishes. Otherwise, yeah. Virtual connections between what?
The phones, cameras in church, to watch the liturgies.
Okay.
To be able to
Like the live streaming?
Correct, yeah.
What's my opinion about the live streaming?
What's your view? Yeah, and if you think they should stay long-term, or do they help cash?
You want to put me on the spot, eh? In Simonopetra, when I was there, once upon a time, they had a system that people who were sick, they could hear the service. They couldn't see anything, but they could hear the service. It was like a radio frequency, and they had a speaker in the floor, which was like the nurse, no, like the hospital. And they could hear the service. This is useful if someone is sick. But you can't replace the feelings that and the prayers of the live thing when you're there, present. You can't take Holy Communion through the internet, right? Unless, God forbid, they start funny business like sending the Holy Communion in the mail or stuff. Hopefully not. This will be terrible. It can happen. So it serves a purpose when the restrictions were there, and it serves a purpose if for whatever reason you're isolated somewhere and you can't go to church, but it doesn't serve a purpose if we get lazy and we don't go to church. You can't replace the sacraments with a screen. It's better than nothing, but you can't replace them. You can't replace them. But by saying that, for example, I think All Saints, they live stream to the nursing homes. This is something useful. The elderly, they can't always go to church. Eventually, they have to go for Holy Communion, but they can't always go to church. And sometimes even the priest needs to visit them instead of them visiting the church. So they serve a purpose, but once the restrictions are lifted, I think the proper thing is to go back to how we were. And if we make it a habit, it's not good. You can't eat popcorn and watch a service. It's not. It's weird. Yeah.
I think you only have one last question.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry. You have to speak slower because there is echo, and I can't understand anything.
At the beginning,
yes.
You were talking about
God's what?
Will.
Yes.
How does free will tie into that?
So what's the connection of God's will with free will?
Yeah, because we saw that God's plan is scripted.
So God's plan what? That's predestination. We don't believe in that. That's Protestant. But I will tell you the connection. Yes. So we don't believe in our church that God has our future written, set in stone, and we have no choice. This is heresy. This is not right. God gives us choices, and it's up to us what to choose. And regardless what we choose, he will still be there for us. So there could be a few different paths for each one of us. But the question is, how much of myself am I willing to give to God? Because some paths, they need more sacrifices than others. I don't know if this makes sense. When I first started going to Simonopetra, one of the first times that I saw Yeruda Milianon, I told him, Yeruda, I want to submit my will to God's will the way that Christ was on the cross. This is part of my confession, but I told him that. That's how I felt at the time. And he told me not to submit, to unify. Όχι να υποτάξεις, να ταυτίσεις. So we don't submit our will. We freely accept what God wants from us, and we make His will and my will one. It's like a marriage. Husband and wife, they have to agree. If they don't agree, it's not good. But they have to freely agree into something. We can't force God. It's not going to turn out right. He will still be there, but it won't be the best. And we can't be forced if we don't love God enough. So according to the level of our love for God, is us accepting His will for us. But once you empty yourself, I might mix you up, but I have to say this. Once you totally empty yourself and you become one with God, then God can submit His will to yours. And I will give you an example. Again about Yerdemir. We might as well change the subject. So when he was an abbot in Meteora, before they moved to Mount Athos, he knew a family. This family had a young boy. The young boy had a car accident and he was dying. The parents, they were very pious people close to Yerdemilena. They ran to him and they told him, Yerda, please pray for our son, we will lose him. Yerdas prayed and the kid survived. It was clearly a miracle, but the kid survived. But then do you know what Yerdas Emiliano said? This kid should have not survived, but I felt sorry for the parents and I asked God for it. So this means that God listened to Yerda Emiliano, but this kid would have been better spiritually if he was to pass away then and there. I don't know what happened to his life afterwards, but that's what Yerdas Emiliano said. Does this make any sense? I mixed you up, didn't I?
No.
Listen to it again, the recording, and you will understand what I'm saying. It's not black and white. But I'm telling you, the more you love God, the more you give your free will, you have to unify your will with Him, then God can listen to you and He can make things happen that you pray for. So God can be obedient to you afterwards. And this doesn't mean that you do this because of your ego. It's like Panagia Paramithia, if you know about the miraculous icon. Panagia had authority over Christ's will, and Panagia forced Christ to reveal that the pirates, they were going to attack the monastery of Otopedi, if you know the story. You don't know the story? So basically it's a wall painting, and one day the monks back then, they were not proper, and Panagia wanted to warn them that if they were to open the gates, they will be attacked and die. And the monk, when he went to light the kadili, he heard a voice from Panagia from the wall painting, don't open the gates today. And then a miracle happened in front of his eyes. Christ put his hand to shut Panagia's mouth and told her, in front of the monk, told her, don't tell them because they're not worthy of surviving. And Panagia grabbed his hand, moved it away, and she said again, don't open your gates today. This is Panagia having authority over God's will, over Christ's will. Why? Because of her love. Humans can do this. If you totally empty yourself and you become one with God, you get authority over His will. But you will use it for the benefit of others. You won't use it for yourself. So it's a selfless action again. It's confusing, isn't it? Listen to it again, you will make more sense. Sorry? How do we what?
Recognize
what? How do you recognize God's will? If you don't know what to do, you pray, and whatever is more peaceful inside you, that's what you do. And the peace of your heart will lead you where you should be. That's simple, isn't it? Okay. Thank God. Did you want to say something?
I was going to reflect in matters of God's will, the story of the Archangel Gabriel appearing to the Virgin Mary, and the fact that she had to make a choice
yes.
to hear Christ.
And of course.
In reflection, completely emptied herself, she even asks the question to the Archangel, how can I bear a son if I am a virgin? And he says, you will not only bear a son, but you will put in Jesus and he will be the Son of the Most High. And she completely submits to him and says that if it is God's will, so be it, let it be done. And so we see in Luke 1, the Virgin Mary coming out, completely submitting herself and making the choice, as you said, in grace,
yes.
to submit to God and to make that decision.
That's correct. And also, Panagia, when the archangel announced her, to her that she would be the mother of God, she couldn't even understand what he was talking about. She just accepted it, whatever it was. Yeah. That's it?
Okay. This will be the last question.
It's always the last question. I've got a spiritual child. When we talk on the phone, he tells me, Yerda, one more thing. And then one more thing. And then an hour later, one more thing. So the last question. The question is, why would you tell them don't do this and don't do that?
Well, when they ask your advice or they're close to you, but when you say something they like.
Sometimes, by even if people ask you your advice, if you tell them directly, they can't handle it. So you have to show them love, embrace them as they are, and then sometimes your example might work better than your advice. And you can say something by softening it up a little bit. Say something along the lines, if I was in your shoes, I would have thought in this and this and this way. Don't tell them directly. They know how to extract what you want to say. But if you say it directly, they might react. And sometimes you tell them the opposite of what you want them to do, because you know that they will react, and they will do the opposite. No, it doesn't happen. But we need to be very gentle with people. People, they get traumatized when we tell them do this, because they think that we take their freedom away. And that's not what God does with us. So we shouldn't do this to others. Every time we deal with someone, we need to think, what would Christ have done if he was me? If you think like that, you will find a way around this person. But they need to be shown a lot of love so that they would trust you, and then slowly. It doesn't happen overnight. Does this answer your question? And sometimes when they say, I don't care, it's not that they don't care. It's just that they find it very difficult. And we need to sympathize with them. Some people, they find it difficult, literally. So small steps, it's all right. That's it.
Thank you.
Yes. All right, just to, before you, don't rush. Everybody wants to leave. Just to announce, you already know, a couple of things. The one is that this Saturday we have a day retreat at the monastery, and the subject, we will have whole program, you can find it on our Facebook, but the subject of a panel, small panel, will be dealing with change. And just to also tell you that in few days, our app, Orthodoxy, will be live, and you will be able to download it for free from App Store, Google Play, and what's the third one? There's a third one, Amazon. All right, that's it. Ευχών των Αγίων Πατέρων ημών, Κύριος Χριστέ ο Θεός, ελέησον και σώσον ημάς. Αμήν. Thanks, everyone.
Just a quick update, everyone. Tomorrow at St. Sophia, open house.